Guys, the calendar has officially flipped to April, and that means that we are 1 month closer to the start of another college football season. If I may I suggest that if you've kind of been tuned out of the sport for a while because you've been focusing on other things like March Madness, like maybe MLB opening day, or the other sports that are happening that are going on right now, that's okay. We encourage you to watch other sports. But if I may I suggest that you come back to the world of college football, because yes, the calendar did just flip to April, but by the looks of things, there is a lot that we need to unpack. And again, it's been about a week since we've last spoke, which means there is a lot to catch up on. Welcome into the Air Raid with Parker Kelly on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Make sure, if you haven't already, to, one, subscribe to The Game Nashville, where you can get access to all of our great podcasts that we're doing here at 102.5 The Game, and you can get every episode to The Air Raid with Parker Kelly so that you can stay caught up on the world of college football, because that's why we're here, right? We're here to talk about the greatest sport on planet Earth, which is college football. And please, if you haven't already, please follow me. I am on Twitter, or X, whichever you call it nowadays. I'm also at Instagram, at Parker_Kelly10. But without further ado, let's get to the show, shall we? Okay, so we talked about on the last show how Deion Sanders in Colorado suggested playing a spring game, but not just the traditional spring game that teams have been known to do in the past. No, he wants to model it like the NFL, and he actually wants to scrimmage another opponent. He talked about that during one of his media availability press conferences last week, and of course, as it does with Deion Sanders, it gained a lot of traction. Fran Brown, the head coach at Syracuse, reached out, was interested. I know Joey McGuire at Texas Tech, the head coach there, he showed interest in it. Colorado submitted, and I believe Syracuse did as well, but they submitted a waiver to the NCAA to request permission to play this spring game. And as you can expect, the NCAA said no. And they cited three reasons for opposing this waiver. The first being the late timing, as most teams have already planned out spring practice. And in some cases, they have come to the end of spring practice. That's pretty fair, I believe. That one is pretty acceptable. The other two, I do take a little bit of an issue with. Here was the second reason they opposed the waiver. A recruiting advantage could be given to Colorado and Syracuse that other teams would not receive because they don't hold a scrimmage like this in the spring. I do have an issue with this because this isn't the NFL. This is college football. In the NFL, it is built, the league is constructed around each team in the league going 500. This is college football. I did an entire show on how college football is different from the NFL. If you haven't already listened to that, I highly suggest that you go back and you listen. I did a segment on it, and it was a pretty lengthy segment, but I explained the differences between college football and the NFL. Two great sports, but I kind of got a little tired of everybody saying, oh, college football is becoming more like the NFL. In ways, sure, but it is becoming very different. College football is very different from the NFL in this way because there are teams that have all kinds of recruiting advantages over other teams. For example, now this is just a hypothetical. Let's take Alabama, for example, and Middle Tennessee State. Both are in the FBS, but Alabama has a clear-cut recruiting advantage over a Middle Tennessee State. and it's not particularly close. The NCAA coming out and saying that Colorado and Syracuse would be provided with a recruiting advantage may be true, but again, this isn't the NFL. Teams have advantages over other teams all the time. This is nothing new. So that was the second reason that they listed in the waiver. The third reason, potential impact for athletes missing classes to participate in the practices and the scrimmages. Here's where it's going to get a little spicy. Oh, so now in NCAA, you decide to care about academics. Because it didn't seem like you cared about academics when you decided to have two transfer portal windows, one being in the winter and one being in the spring. Because after spring ball is officially over and the deadline comes and it's time to enter the portal for those that want to, that's smack dab in the middle of the spring semester. You don't seem to care about academics then. There is a whole discussion going on about, you know, we're in the Final Four of March Madness, but about a week ago, while the tournament was being played, I believe it was right before the Sweet 16, the college basketball transfer portal window opened up in the middle of March Madness. Coaches are preparing their teams for Sweet 16 matchups, but they also have to worry about recruits and who's going to be on next year's team. Who might enter the portal on the team currently? Tom Izzo, the head coach at Michigan State, he went on a whole tangent about this. I believe it was a two-minute soundbite, but I saw it when I was scrolling on Twitter. I'm sure some of you have seen that, but everything he said is very accurate. It's ridiculous. The NCAA doesn't care about academics then. It seems like that they care about academics only when it benefits their argument. Doesn't seem like they care about academics when they decided to plop a team like Oregon in the Big Ten. Now, you can get away with that kind of stuff on football because it's a lot of weekend traveling. But let's take the other Olympic sports, for example. Let's say tennis. Oregon has a midweek tennis match against Rutgers. Both teams are in the Big Ten. And those student-athletes have to travel cross-country for a conference matchup and then have a Calc 3 exam the next morning at 8 a.m. Does the NCAA care about academics then? I don't think so. So those are the three reasons that the NCAA listed when they declined the waiver of Colorado and Syracuse to play a spring game against each other in the month of April. But let me tell you, this idea is a total goldmine. It is a total goldmine because it benefits both sides. It benefits the players, I would say, and it's going to benefit the media rights partner because they are going to air it. If it happens, they are going to air it, and they will make money off of it because people crave football year-round. And if they get spring football, they're going to watch, especially if Deion Sanders is the coach on the sidelines. But the spring game, probably not going to happen this year. But trust me, this is going to happen at some point. Again, may not be this year, but it could be as early as next year. Because now, it is on people's radars. It is on the NCAA's radar. It is on teams' radar. I think this idea is definitely going to happen. And there is hope. Because there is a group of people called the FBS Oversight Committee, which consists mostly of athletic directors and conference administrators. Two other people that are in this committee, Illinois head coach Brett Bielema and the college football playoff executive director, Rich Clark. They are all set to meet on April 10th to discuss future joint spring practices. So there is a little bit of tangible hope that this is going to happen. I hope it does, because this idea is a total goldmine. Speaking of Colorado, Did you see the news about Deion Sanders getting an extension with university? Because Deion Sanders has been extended by the University of Colorado, a 5-year, $54 million contract extension that runs through the 2029 season, making him one of the highest paid coaches in the country. I believe, when you look at numbers, believe that he is a top 5 paid coach in college football. A base salary that starts at $10 million in 2025, which makes him the highest paid football coach in the Big 12. And again, among the top 10 highest paid football coaches in the country as it stands for 2025. Sanders will earn another $10 million in 2026, $11 million in 2027, $11 million in 2028, and $12 million in 2029 if we're just breaking it down by the year. Now, I'm going to explain a term, because this term that I'm about to explain is something I like to refer to as the Deion tax. The Deion tax is pretty self-explanatory if you really think about it. But if you just take a moment just to think, what is the Deion tax? Well, let me tell you. The Deion tax is whenever Deion Sanders does something or says something, it is usually met with a fair amount of criticism, regardless of what he does. I'm convinced that Deion Sanders could go serve at the local soup kitchen, and someone out there on the Twitter sphere would find a way to put a negative connotation around it. I'm totally convinced that that could happen. I do not think that that is out of the realm of possibility at all. And I think that there's evidence, because if you take his son, Shedeur Sanders, who is in the NFL draft and projected to be a top 5 pick, if you look at that, Shedeur Sanders, I thought, and you know at this station we covered the Tennessee Titans, so the Titans have had a heavy amount of interest in Shedeur Sanders, and I've heard nothing but flawless reports of how he has gone about the interview process, how he has gone about the talking with different teams. And even though he hasn't worked out, he has his pro day coming up this week. But I've heard nothing but flawless reports, but yet there are a large chunk of media members out there and draft gurus that have found a way to criticize Shedeur Sanders and makes other people skeptical. Even though Shedeur has, again, been flawless throughout this whole draft process. That is an example of the Deion tax, because you take his son Shedeur, who, just because of the last name that he wears on the back of his jersey, he's going to get criticized, because he is Deion's son. Deion Sanders, he demands eyeballs. He's always demanded eyeballs pretty much his whole life since, you know, was a player at Florida State, was a superstar Hall of Famer in the NFL, had a stint in the MLB as well. He's always demanded eyeballs, but again, the Deion tax. Anything that he does or says is met with a fair amount of criticism, regardless of how you feel about him. But what is the truth about Deion Sanders? Let's just all collectively together, let's leave our opinions of him at the doorstep and look at the facts. Well, he inherited a 1-win football team when he took over in 2022. Since then, he has led the Buffaloes to 13 wins, which is 6.5 a season, and a bowl berth. In 2023, his first season as head coach, they went 4-8. Now, to the less informed fan, 4-8 is not, it's below 500, not a good record. But when you put it into context, Deion Sanders inherited a Colorado team that went 1-11 in 2022. They were completely, nobody gave a second thought about Colorado Buffalo football. But in 2023, they improved their win total by 3, which, if you just take that, improving any win total by 3, I'd say is a step in the right direction. Colorado was also ranked that year, and they were put on the national stage once again. In year one. In year one, mind you. So I would consider, despite the 4-8 record, obviously no one wants to go 4-8. Nobody wants to have a losing record. But I would consider that season successful. In 2023, 9-4. And led the Colorado Buffaloes to a bowl game. Now, they did lose the bowl game, but they went to a bowl game and finished the year ranked in the college football playoff rankings. So, again, a pretty successful season. And not to mention that he coached the 2024 Heisman Trophy winner, which is the most prestigious award in our sport. There's no question that Colorado is in the right hands under Deion Sanders, and they have continually gotten better. He has brought relevancy again to Colorado, and not to mention they are selling out home games left and right. Here's another cool thing about Deion Sanders at Colorado. CU has received a 20% increase in applications, just over 67,000, with 18% of those applications coming from out-of-state applicants. Home football games generated a combined $93.9 million in direct economic impact to the city of Boulder and $146.5 million in total regional economic impact. So Deion Sanders is not just making an impact on the Colorado football program, but he's making an impact on the community of Boulder in a positive way. The school is benefiting from it. The city is benefiting from it. His reach goes just beyond football. And Deion Sanders, a lot of people speculated that he could take the Dallas Cowboys job. He could follow Shadur to the NFL. He wants to coach his son in the NFL. Well, signing this extension means that he is in it for the foreseeable future. He had an opportunity to leave, but he stayed. Signed the extension. I think that provides a recruiting advantage for Colorado, don't you? Because recruits want stability. Anybody wants stability within a football program. So I think that benefits Colorado. And again, regardless of what your opinion is on Deion Sanders, look at it or try to look at it as objectively as you can. Look at the facts. Look at what he has done since taking over the reins at Colorado and try to consider where Colorado had been. We're going to be throwing around some numbers here on this show today because the NCAA, they just can't catch a break, can they? The NCAA is just taking L after L after L. This news broke late last week that former Tennessee football coach Jeremy Pruitt has filed a lawsuit against the NCAA. He's taken them to court as he's seeking $100 million and claims that the NCAA conspired with the University of Tennessee to make him a sacrificial lamb. I do think this is quite funny. When I saw the headline, I think that this is hilarious because Tennessee fired Jeremy Pruitt, but yet it somehow within the next couple of years or so, it resulted in not only the University of Tennessee suing the heck out of the NCAA, but it also resulted in Jeremy Pruitt trying to sue the NCAA for all they're worth. So both sides are suing the NCAA here. NCAA can't catch a break. Basically, Tennessee fired Jeremy Pruitt in January 2021 because of recruiting violations, and he didn't receive any of his $12.6 million buyout. And then the NCAA handed out a stiff punishment to Jeremy Pruitt, a 6-year show cause penalty, and a year-long suspension from coaching in games and recruiting off campus in his first year back, that he should return to the college ranks. A show cause, because I know that this may be a lot of legalese kind of thrown at you, but a show cause is basically if a school wants to hire Jeremy Pruitt, that school and or Pruitt must make a case to justify, explain, or prove why he should be hired, and typically that stuff is in front of a court. So it's a pretty stiff penalty, and it makes it hard to hire Jeremy Pruitt. The truth is, Jeremy Pruitt did pay players. That is true. Was he doing something before it came legal? Yes, also true. Because now it's totally fine to pay players. It's part of the game. I'm going to give you an example. So in college basketball, McNeese State this year, they were a popular upset pick in March Madness. They upset Clemson. Will Wade was their head coach this past season. He was at LSU beforehand, got fired from LSU for similar reasons to why Pruitt got fired for recruiting violations. Now that Will Wade has led McNeese State to back-to-back NCAA tournament appearances in the last 2 years, he's back in the power conferences as he was just hired by NC State. What is the difference between a guy like Will Wade and Jeremy Pruitt, who basically got fired for the same exact reasons, but yet Jeremy Pruitt still is coaching in a high school in Alabama while Will Wade is back in the power conferences at NC State and the ACC? The difference between them is one is a great head coach and the other was not. Will Wade is a great head coach. Jeremy Pruitt just wasn't a great head coach. Now, Pruitt was a great defensive coordinator because he was with Alabama under Nick Saban, and they had some great defenses under Jeremy Pruitt. But when he went to Tennessee to become a head coach, just didn't work out. And not just because of the recruiting violations, the on-the-field product was not to the expectation that it is at a school like the University of Tennessee. That's just kind of how it goes. You have a great head coach in Will Wade who gets a second chance to coach at a major level. Whereas guys like Jeremy Pruitt, they weren't too good at their job as a head coach, and it's a lot tougher for them to get a job as a head coach. Now, I'm not saying that's right. I'm not saying I agree with it. I'm just saying that's kind of the reality of the situation. So, for whatever that's worth, that's kind of what's been going on with Jeremy Pruitt as he is taking the NCAA to court. I do actually think that because Jeremy Pruitt, his reputation was tarnished, I do think the NCAA actually has a chance to win this court case, which is something that I have not said in a long time. I do think that they have a chance to win this court case. So, speaking of coaches that have been fired, but real quick, I need a sip of water. Got to keep the vocal cords feeling good here. As we continue to talk about tons of news that has come out. Okay, Troy Taylor is out at Stanford. He was fired last week amid findings that from two different outside firms that he had bullied and belittled a couple of female staffers, among other things too. But he was fired last week at Stanford. Now, a week later, Andrew Luck, if you remember, he is now the general manager of the Stanford football team. Andrew Luck has hired a familiar face and Frank Reich to be the school's new interim football coach. If you remember, Frank Reich was the head coach of the Carolina Panthers when they drafted Bryce Young. He did not even make it a complete season in Carolina, as he was fired after a 1-11 start. Before that, he was the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts, where he coached Andrew Luck. He actually coached Andrew Luck's final season in the NFL in 2018. So it has been reported that Andrew Luck and Frank Reich have a pretty strong relationship, considering the quarterback-to-head coach relationship. This is a one-year deal for Frank Reich, as he's just set to coach the 2025 season, and Stanford will launch a national search after the season is ended. Now, I think this is – I like this idea for multiple reasons. One, Andrew Luck has complete control over the coaching staff. Complete control, because it was Andrew Luck's decision to fire Troy Taylor. It was Andrew Luck's decision to hire Frank Reich. I trust Andrew Luck in this decision-making process. I like that he is in control of this, because Andrew Luck is a brilliant football mind, and just considering the reputation he is a guy that I would trust to build a football program to put Stanford back on the map. But I really like this move of bringing in Frank Reich for a year for multiple reasons. One, Andrew Luck knows Frank Reich. They have a strong relationship. Again, Frank Reich was Andrew Luck's coach in 2018, his final season in the NFL. The two have a strong relationship. Frank Reich has worked with some successful quarterbacks in the NFL. He's worked with Philip Rivers. He's worked with Carson Wentz during his 2017 MVP caliber season that unfortunately ended due to a knee injury. And, of course, worked with Andrew Luck. He's also worked with Nick Foles. Nick Foles has won a Super Bowl. So, Frank Reich has a history of working with successful quarterbacks. And this should be able to help Stanford out for a year. Because if you bring in a guy who's cut his teeth in the NFL, you bring him down to the college ranks, this should kind of help, one, bring some a little bit of notoriety to Stanford, especially after they have moved to the ACC. But given his background in working with professional athletes, many would assume that it would translate a little bit better to the college ranks. So we'll have to see how that goes. I'm not making any opinions on it. But Frank Reich, I would assume, wants to go back to the NFL. If he does a good job at Stanford, there may be some NFL interest. So I like this kind of one-year prove-it deal, because, one, Andrew Luck is trying to help get Stanford football back on the map. And I see this, if things go well, I could see this benefiting Frank Reich. So I like this one-year deal on multiple fronts. But it's not going to be an easy situation to inherit at Stanford, because one of the program's best players, David Bailey, who was an outside linebacker, he entered the portal on Friday, kind of given everything that's going on with the program. And not to mention, they also currently, Stanford does not have an athletic director, as Bernard Muir decided to step down as AD last week. So you don't have an athletic director to work with. They did promote a guy to be the interim AD, but they're still trying to find a permanent. And one of the program's best players decided to enter the transfer portal. So, not exactly an ideal situation for Stanford, but I honestly, this is just the fan of me talking. I hope that Frank Reich is able to get Stanford back to national prominence. Like, I remember them being when I was a kid, like back when they had Andrew Luck and when they had guys like Christian McCaffrey and Kevin Hogan. Those Stanford teams were always pretty good, pretty good teams. I remember them being in the top 10 a lot. So I hope that this works out for Stanford and he's kind of able to give Frank Reich, I'm speaking of, I hope he's able to give kind of a jump start to Stanford for when they are able to find a permanent head coach after the 2025 season is complete. moving right along, we're actually at a pretty brisk pace here because that was four major topics, and we still have a little ways to go here. We've been talking a lot about spring games. We've talked about teams that have canceled their spring games because of tampering purposes, which, of course, I'm referring to Nebraska. We've talked about teams that have canceled because the regular season and postseason, if you combine the two, it's a lot longer of a season than what it used to be in the past because of the 12-team college football playoff. We've talked about Deion Sanders and how he has presented the idea that, honestly, I'm kind of surprised it's not been presented sooner, but the idea has been presented of an NFL-like model in the spring of scrimmaging against other teams, holding joint practices, and now Mike Gundy has spoken out on the spring practices. He's actually suggested a spring bedlam. Bedlam is the rivalry between Oklahoma State and Oklahoma. All right. I read this headline, guys, and I wanted to vomit. And you're going to ask why. Well, I'll tell you. If you're anything like me, you know, if you've been listening to this podcast, you know that I don't want to mess with the tradition of college football. Especially when it comes to rivalries, because I've mentioned this on previous shows, but rivalries are really the bedrock of college football. You don't mess with rivalries. Oklahoma and Oklahoma State did not play last season, and that ended a 121 consecutive game streak of Bedlam being played. They didn't play last season, and I hated it. I hated it because I've always enjoyed watching Bedlam because it is a great rivalry in college football. I actually have a brilliant idea. How about instead of a spring Bedlam, we have a fall Bedlam? I mean, is it too crazy to put that idea out in the ether here? Because, look, like, the ideas of actual spring games, that's kind of been the talking point right now, and everyone wants to be first, everyone wants to be second when it comes to presenting new ideas. No one wants to be third. No one wants to be third, because then you just look like a follower when it comes to presenting new ideas. But if y'all want to do something in the spring, if Oklahoma State and Oklahoma want to do something in the spring, okay, go for it. But I plead with you on behalf of the college football community, please bring Bedlam back. Bring Bedlam back. Bring Bedlam back to the fall. Florida and Florida State play at the end of every year. They're not conference opponents. Georgia and Georgia Tech, they're not conference opponents either, but yet they still play at the end of every year. And it's fun. It is fun. Do you remember the game from last year between Georgia and Georgia Tech? The 17 overtime game that they went to, that was fun. It was fun to watch. And just because Oklahoma moved to the SEC doesn't mean we have to cancel Bedlam. I know I'm not the biggest fan of conference realignment and conference expansion either, but that doesn't mean we have to cut off all bloodlines here. Play Bedlam. Play Bedlam in the fall, please. For I speak on behalf of the college football community when I ask that. Please. Play the game. Just do it. Okay. Now that I've gotten that off my chest, I do have some sad news to present on the show. Gary Danielson, famous CBS college football analyst, announced that he would be retiring after the 2025 season. We're talking about the longest tenured college football analyst on any network. He's been going at it for a long time. This one tugged at the heartstrings a little bit because he's been a staple of College Football Saturdays as long as I can remember. Because for those of you that have been listening, and for those of you who know me, I've grown up in the South my whole life, been a full... My whole life, I've grown up in Middle Tennessee, and literally smack dab in the middle of SEC country. And on Saturday afternoons, what we'd do is we would turn it on 2:30 Central Time to the SEC on CBS for the CBS Game of the Week. And you hear, when I was a kid, it was Vern Lundquist and Gary Danielson, and then it became Brad Nessler and Gary Danielson. But those voices that you would hear were staples of my childhood growing up. And the CBS games were one of my favorite games to watch every single week. And yes, the CBS now has a partnership with the Big Ten, and we still get to hear Gary Danielson and Brad Nessler, and they still do a phenomenal job. But I'm going to enjoy the heck out of this last ride with Gary Danielson, because we get him for one more season. He's retiring after the 2025 season. Charles Davis, who is covered the NFL, covered college football on CBS, he's going to take over and call games with Brad Nessler as the color analyst. I think he will do a fantastic job. But Gary Danielson, if you happen to be listening to the show, just know that I always enjoyed hearing your voice every single week on the CBS Game of the Week. You are a staple in college football Saturdays. You played a big role in Saturdays in the fall and what they meant. And it's going to be tough to see you go, but no perfect thing lasts forever except in our dreams. So here's to Gary Danielson, and definitely going to enjoy this last season that we get of his on CBS in 2025. Okay, so we covered a lot of ground here, but there is one more thing that I want to bring up on tonight's show, because I said it at the start, but it's time to rein back into college football, because we have big news coming on later in the week. But on April 7th, there is an upcoming house settlement. This should be the final house settlement that involves several things. This is the house settlement. I know there's a lot of different court cases. It's really easy to get them all confused. But the house settlement will be decided on April 7th. It involves the $2.8 billion damage payments to former D1 athletes who participated between the seasons the years 2016 to 2024. This is going to allow schools to officially start sharing revenue with their student athletes. That is most likely going to start in the 2025-2026 school year. And protection of scholarships, which basically means that'll prohibit schools from reducing, canceling, or failing to renew athletic scholarships for athletic reasons. So this is a really big deal, because we're entering into not necessarily a new era, because we've been here for a couple of years now, but this is kind of going to send shockwaves throughout college football, because the key changes, revenue sharing, college teams are going to be allowed to share revenue with their athletes, distributed however they see fit. It's about 22% of average Power 5 revenue is going to be distributed to the players. So NIL deals. This house settlement will allow student athletes to seek out NIL deals from third parties. Any NIL deal surpassing $600 will be subject to independent review to ensure that they reflect fair market value. So that is definitely a key change. Scholarship protections, I mentioned that prohibits schools from reducing, canceling, or failing to renew athletic scholarships. And here's the big one, the enforcement entity that I talked about on a previous show. I can't remember which one exactly, but basically, there will be an enforcement entity, not the NCAA. This is separate from the NCAA. But they will be responsible for overseeing NIL deals and ensuring compliance with the settlement's terms. So basically, if you step out of line when it comes to NIL, there will be a punishment, and it won't be just a little slap on the wrist. It'll be a stiff punishment. So all of this is being decided on April 7th, the House settlement. Make sure that you're paying attention to that, because that is something to keep track of. But covered a lot of ground in about 40 minutes here tonight on the show. I really appreciate you listening. It's time to lock back into college football, because we got lots more to talk about. I have been told several times, how are you going to do a college football podcast year-round? Especially after the college football season ends. Well, you have days like this where the news is coming at you left and right, and we got a lot to talk about. So, again, I appreciate you listening to the show. We'll have another episode here for you coming up, but again, make sure to stay tuned into the podcast. Make sure to subscribe to The Game Nashville. You can get access, again, to all of our great podcasts and The Air Raid with Parker Kelly. You will not miss a single second of what's going on in the college football world, especially in what some believe to be the quote-unquote offseason. I will keep you up to date with that. But really appreciate you listening. We'll talk to you soon.